Hello and welcome to the Digital Insight, the technology and supply chain podcast that delivers valuable C-level perspective into the core issues surrounding business transformation and digital disruption. Each episode will bring you the most inspiring executive insights from those leading transformation strategies within the world's biggest and best-known companies. The Digital Insight. Disrupt. Transform. Evolve.
Welcome to the Digital Insight, the official podcast series for Interface and CPO Strategy magazines. In this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Frank Konieczny, the Chief Technology Officer at the United States Air Force. Frank and I discuss the role of the CTO and how it's evolved over recent years thanks to continuous digital disruption and innovation, and how it's redefining the very nature of the aerospace industry. With people constantly seeking for the shiny new technology in the industry, Frank believes that the organization must keep its efforts mission-focused at all times. Frank, welcome to the Digital Insight.
Hello, my name is Frank Konieczny. I'm from the Air Force. I'm the Chief Information Technology Officer, which is really the CTO that's associated with IT across all of the Air Force.
Perfect. So tell me a little bit about then your experience and your background and how you essentially ended up in that position then.
Yeah, people ask me this all the time because it's unusual, because I used to be in industry. And from going from industry into government is kind of the opposite way that most people do. They actually go from government back into industry. What happened was I was the chief technology officer, the CIO, the operations director at a large government contractor, telecommunications contractor. And what happened was one of my friends was actually at the Air Force, and he came over and he was trying to get technology established. And basically I told him, okay, I'll go there to the Air Force if you can give me a CTO position, a true CTO position in the Air Force. And it was basically, he was a friend of mine. I had, his wife was actually a deputy of mine for a very large project. So I kind of knew the family. So I said, okay, I'll try this for a while and see how this works. And, it's actually worked pretty good in a sense, because what they wanted to do is they wanted the injection of commercial capabilities and commercial experience into the government side. And so it was kind of a new thing. And you see it more now than ever, that we get more people from the industry coming into government because they want that injection of talent and capability and difference of opinion.
Okay. And going back then, so you say obviously you're seeing it more and more now, but going back to when you first started them, when you did coming and you said it then, you wanted a true CTO role. What do you mean then? And what was meant then by the idea of a true CTO role?
Well, what happened was they had not given a position description of a CTO yet for the Air Force. In fact, I think I was the first position description of a CTO in any of the components, the Army, the Navy, you know, the Coast Guard, whatever. So they had to come out with one. Basically, you know, my friend actually helped him craft it because of I was already a CTO and we kind of knew what we were going to do. But it was a question of the scope of the CTO responsibilities across the Air Force, because the Air Force is rather large. And so that's why, you know, now we talk about me as being a chief information technology officer, because there is another CTO for R&D for like airplane platform development, like materials, wingspans, you know, things like that, which I don't get involved in. I only get involved in the IT part of it. But the issue always was, what should a CTO do and what expanse does a CTO have? And therefore, they had to come out with a position description that says this. And that's what was unique about it, was that they had never thought about doing this before. They had technical advisors come in, but they had never had a true cross the Air Force CTO.
Yeah, and you talked about that sort of industry experience then and the background you came from. To sort of put it bluntly, what do you think you brought to the role? You know, what kind of made you and that position unique at the time?
Well, it's kind of interesting, because what happened was I had both operational experience as well as chief information officer experience as well as technology experience, which was kind of unusual. I mean, you know, I could look at it from various viewpoints that normally they would not be, they'd be more pigeonholed into their viewpoints as to how they would look at things. Because I could look at it at the operations side and say, hey, I need some new technology to support this better, and I could bring that in. So I was, what my role was basically was to try to bring new technology into the organizational structure as it was, which was somewhat difficult at the beginning because this was brand new to them. And we had to convince, you know, everybody, yes, this was a good idea. And they all eventually accepted that. But that was the big difference, that you know, most of the stuff that we do in the Air Force is basically you write requirements, you generate a proposal, an RFP, some vendor comes in and wins the bid, and then they continue on and everybody's very happy. But they never think about how you inject technology in per se, or what technology you want to really go for, because a lot of the stuff was requirements are based upon your prior history and your knowledge. And so I was bringing in new types of capabilities that they hadn't seen before. So that's why it was more effective.
And you said there that it was difficult at start because it was kind of a case of you were almost convincing people that this was the right thing to do. Expand on that a little bit then, in terms of, because that's something that we hear in a lot of companies about sort of technology and the role of CTO, is that there seems to be a kind of an operational buy-in required. What sort of early conversations were you having then where you had to do that kind of convincing, so to speak?
Well, eventually I had to set up what we call the target baseline architecture, because that's the only way they could see something. You know, the difficulty is you say, hey, you should do this. They want to see some capability. They want to see something in paper. It's just one of those things. And so first of all, you have to show them, yes, you have the intelligence and the capability to do this. Second of all, you have to present something to them that says, hey, here's a problem I know you have, and here's some new technologies that you probably should start investigating to do this. And so what we did, we put this into my target baseline. Target baseline for us is basically what's going to happen for a particular problem area within like 2 years. What you should be going for, what technologies are available for 2 years out. And that's where so it was a different way of looking at it, because most of the planning cycles for the government is basically 10 years out. And now we're in the IT age where 10 years out is impossible. You can't even determine barely what's going to happen next year. And then also to convince them that, yes, you do know what's going on. You are intelligent enough to realize this. You do have some experience behind you that says, hey, you should do this. I mean, I remember one of my first issues with them was they were doing some testing. And they were testing on test platform, test area, test network or whatever. And when they brought it into the real network, it never worked right. And they were like, well, I don't understand this. You know, we tested it. You know, and I was like, well, normally in industry, you don't do that. You test it on a test network, and then you bring it into the real network, and then you test it in the real network, and you control it, because that's the way you do it. You just have to make sure, because the network is so complex, you just can't build a test network that does everything, and you control what's going on. And they're like, well, we never usually do that. We want to make sure it's perfect before we actually move. And I was like, okay, guys, you can't really do this anymore. It's so complex, you know. And so I convinced them that, yes, they should be testing on the real production network, and they should control it in a different way than they were doing it before. And so it's just little things like that that convince them that, yes, maybe you know what you're doing because you have some experience. A lot of it is a trust issue. They have to begin to trust that you do understand the technology and you do understand some of the problem spaces. And since I was a DoD contractor before, I had worked with all the components and different problem spaces that they have. And I was a project manager for a very large system for the Army that lasted multiple years and things. So I knew what the problem spaces for basically the components were.
Again, with it being technology, you said right there they wanted it to be perfect first time. And obviously, that's not always going to be the case. How much of a challenge is it then to sort of remove a kind of risk-averse culture? Like, I you know, you've obviously been there a while now, so I'm sure you have achieved that to some degree. But how do you go about establishing that trust and saying, look, I know it's risky, it's technology, but we have to take a risk sometime?
Well, I think it's taken multiple years to get there, which is, of course. But it's just, you know, doing different experiments, I think, and the way they do things is the way they do it. I mean, we seem to, I mean, now, I tell you right now, it's like, yes, everybody believes we have to do risk, everybody believes we have to do continuous monitoring, everybody believes that, you know, anything we feel is going to have a problem with it, and they have to fix it, and it has to be more agile. I think that took a while. I mean, and it's just a question of, and introducing people more to, you know, the capabilities that actually are really out there and getting them off of the 10-year, 20-year plan issue. And I think, you know, doing the technology baseline for 2 years out, and we've done like, we're in the release 6 right now of it, show them, yeah, this was kind of not a bad idea. And we actually show them what was going to happen next, especially in the terms of mobility and things. Is here's the things you should be doing, because you have to get there and have to help the mission that you're working on. So it just takes a while to actually, I find that it takes basically 2 or 3 years to convince people, here's a great idea, and they come back later two years from then and say, hey, that I think I have a great idea. And then they proceed from that point on. But it takes about 2 years of thinking, for them thinking about what's really happening to actually come out with the real answer again.
And how much is it, I mean, this might be completely different because it's, you know, it's a government body, but have you ever experienced it where it's almost the opposite of that, where people see things happening in other industries, in other markets, and because it's new, because it's, let's use the word, because it's a buzzword, they come back to you and say, well, we need this now. Do you ever experience that where they're almost, I don't want to say chasing the market, but they want to capitalize on something without really thinking about it?
Yes, there's lots of that happening. There's lots of shiny objects. I like that shiny object. I want it without understanding the ramifications of the second and third order effects of using that shiny object. We get that from, since the Air Force is pretty distributed across the board, across the globe, we get a lot of that coming in. It basically says, hey, we want to try this. You know, and it's a lot of times they do try and they find out that they can't, it's not extendable to the entire Air Force. And so now that I have a rapport with the rest of the organizations, they come back and say, hey, we tried this, you know, this is maybe interesting. Why don't you consider it for the organization, entire organization? So it's not a question of stopping innovation in the field. It's a question of how do you look at innovation in the field and determine if it's applicable to the entire enterprise and how you would move it to the entire enterprise and support it. Because you just can't stop it. I mean, what's happening is, since we get a lot of young airmen coming in, they all want to do things. They're used to being the culture where they use smartphones all the time. And, you know, when you come back in the Air Force, it's like, okay, you really can't do that because it's restricted and you have to be careful and everything else. So it's a question of how you control the bright, shiny object viewpoint. Oh, I have to have that and tell them, okay, let's look at it from the total mission of the Air Force capability and see what ramifications it has. And so that's been working pretty good now.
And you raised an interesting point there. You mentioned, you know, you've kind of established this rapport with the different organizations. This sort of links back to sort of a common theme that I hear when I talk to other people in a sort of CTO role is that, you know, technology and the idea of what the CTO or just even the IT function of a company, the perception of that has evolved so that over time people now see it as a very strategic part of the business, where once upon a time it was perhaps, you know, just a separate part. It had its separate own function. When you've obviously worked to establish this rapport, have you had to kind of communicate the value of technology, the value of the CTO and what you can bring in a way that is understandable by people who perhaps didn't have that kind of in-depth knowledge of what technology, certain technology is and certain value it can bring?
Yeah, well, I think what you find in the field, especially in the Air Force, we have a lot of officers moving around every 2 years or so because that's the normal pattern. You know, they are now depending more upon, you know, looking at the CTO as the person that kind of understands the mission and what they need to continue with. I think that's the way we establish it now. We have CTOs and basically all the major commands out in the field and a few of the functional commands as well. So we have established a foothold, if you will, throughout the organization because and it's a dependency. I mean, a lot of the officers depend upon the CTO to tell them, you know, is this a good idea or not? In fact, we had one organization that was depending upon the CTO to approve all technologies that they were going to produce or put in the field. So it's a question of, I think the rest of the community has realized technology is occurring at a faster rate than they can possibly absorb, and they need somebody to return to that says, is this a good idea or is this just hype? You know, what is this really happening out there? And since I think we've evolved now to that, as opposed to, you know, before they were just, or the philosophy was, I'm going to write a proposal RFP and I'm going to put it out there and somebody's going to propose against it, I'm going to do that. We're past that stage now, I think, because everybody believes everything happens too quickly.
Yeah. And, you know, almost following on from that, you mentioned a few moments ago that, you know, the newer generations of people coming into the force now are coming from cultures where they've, you know, they have access to smartphones and they are constantly connected. They have better access to technology, and a better understanding of technology. How is that sort of changing then in terms of the way you do work with sort of across the organization that you're now being met with a different generation of person or people that already have different demands than what you're used to, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Well, they want everything now, but that's normal. You know, we all do that. Anything new, you know, is cool. And then again, it's just the question of bringing back into the mission focus, you know, what is really going to support the mission as opposed to anything else. And I think we've succeeded in that pretty much, because we do push them back to the mission and say, hey, you know, and we're actually encouraging this now, which is kind of interesting, because we have competitions from airmen coming in and saying, hey, this is a new technology that we want to produce out there. We're actually giving them money to do things to support, you know, their endeavors and everything else. A lot of times that falls back to me or one of the other CTOs to actually watch them to make sure they're doing it correctly. We also have more competition now from small businesses that we actually support research and development of small businesses to put new technology out into the field, and we actually work with people. So we have turned ourselves more into a technology engine, if you will, looking at various technologies than before, just writing RFPs and sending them out. Now we're kind of like working hand in hand and looking at technology and figuring out, yeah, this is good, or this airman came up with a great idea, let's try to implement it, because we did one of those already, you know. And everybody's more in tune to that now, I think, since we involve the airmen both into, you know, what they think is going to be the future, as well as what we see as in the mission needs that are coming across.
Yeah, and you've sort of covered it a little bit there, but I guess this sort of goes along with that kind of the way your role has evolved. So obviously, you know, you were a CTO, you're now a CITO. I guess, you know, it might be a silly question, but what's the difference, and what are your current, you know, give me an idea of the scope of work that you're doing as a CITO compared to a traditional CTO.
Okay, most CTOs don't have airplane manufacturing associated with them. You know, I mean, industry, you know, if most CTOs are really CTOs based for IT. I mean, the only difference is, you know, we changed the duty title a little bit because we wanted to emphasize that we're focusing on it, on IT as opposed to anything else. But the as opposed to actually doing, you know, material testing for new wings and actually evaluating the capabilities and the vibrations of wings given new designs and everything else and the engines associated with it, things like that. And that's what, you know, we have this way of looking at, you know, the R&D effort before it gets into a technology point where you can actually field it. That's the R&D piece of it. The IT piece is everything after that, basically. I mean, I look at some R&D basically for IT also. I mean, I have two projects running right now that is sort of small businesses that is IT R&D. But again, it's not associated with any kind of platform testing or anything else associated with platform. So, but most organizations, when you talk to them and through the CTO, any of the major ones will tell you they're all IT, because they don't, I mean, there may be some pieces of manufacturing, but most of them are not in the manufacturing area except for watching, making sure the equipment actually works. That's not what they're doing. They're not designing manufacturing equipment per se, unless an IT component, because then we get into, you know, some components of automation, artificial intelligence, and everything else, which is the driver. It's not that I don't work with things on airplanes. I just don't design airplanes.
And, you know, you've talked about small businesses, and you mentioned earlier about vendors. Now, I'm not saying go and give me all the names of your vendors, but what I'm asking more about is the importance of having reliable, you know, this kind of robust network of vendors or partners that you work with to help deliver projects, or, you know, just essentially drive innovation. You know, talk to me about how important it is to have those vendors, you know, on hand, and how do you go about determining what makes a right vendor?
We believe we have to talk to vendors. I talk to 3 to 5 vendors a week on the average, some weeks more than others. But our basic philosophy is, or my basic philosophy is, I will talk to any vendor because I don't know what they offer. I don't know what new technology is. This is the way we get ideas what new technology is out there. We also can shape vendors into looking at their product in a different way towards the mission of the Air Force. Sometimes vendors come in and say, hey, we have this really great idea and here's what we, you know, offer. And we go and say, hey, that's really great, but if you tweak it a little bit, it's really more applicable to what we're doing and what we actually need out there. I mean, the vendors don't understand our problem space. They probably never will, because it's pretty broad and it changes at a rapid rate. And so a lot of times, you know, some government people won't talk to a vendor unless they understand the problem that they have to the problem in their organization. We take it from a different viewpoint. We accept anybody and we want to talk to them, because you may come up with a gem that we have no idea about that we could think later and say is applicable to this particular mission, because technology is changing all the time. And so we're looking for new ways of doing things. And this is the way you have to do. So I talk to many vendors every week. We talk to multiple ones because they come back and say, hey, we understand what you were talking about, and we have, you know, tweaked our solution a little bit, and is this the, you know, more applicable? And if it is, sometimes we go into a testing phase and say, hey, let's go test it on a particular, you know, area and whatever, and we see what happens. So, you know, we try to work well with vendors now. I think the government has realized that the technology that is occurring is in the vendor community. It's not so much being driven by the government community anymore. And the government has to absorb that technology towards a particular mission set that they have. And this is the way we're working with it right now.
Do you ever sort of, you know, we're saying there with the technology being, you know, in that vendor community, do you ever find yourself looking at technology and its applications in other industries and looking and thinking about how perhaps you could, you know, like I said, that tweak that technology and how it could bring value into your industry?
Oh yeah. I mean, we visit like, I can't tell you who we visited last. We were in St. Louis and we visited many industries in St. Louis, for instance, that are not associated at all with the Air Force, because you want to see exactly what they were doing in cybersecurity and everything else associated with their capabilities and what tool sets they were using, and to see what the other industry is actually working with out there, which is totally different than what we do. I mean, for instance, we went to a credit card company and said, what are you doing for your security? And, you know, what is your issues that you have? Just because you want to see if it matches what we're doing or what the difference is and what capabilities they were actually fielding. And so we learn from other industries a lot as to, you know, what their problem space is. And we look at it against our problem space. Say, hey, that's really interesting, or that's too small. Or, you know, they have a real gem here for one particular area, and we should probably copy that or find a different way of doing the same thing.
You know, looking at perhaps then a personal level as somebody working in the role, you know, working directly with technology, how do you ensure that you're, you know, continuously learning and keeping up to date with what's happening in not just obviously in the airspace, but just in technology, you know, global technology dialogue, what's happening, so that you can continuously be, you know, ahead of the game, so to speak?
Well, I read a lot. That's nothing new. But I try to stay abreast of what's going on. Also, the vendors keep me abreast of what's really going on with their push. And so, you know, in different things that we, you know, I look and basically look at what technology is actually happening, you know, where should we be going, you know, like, it's just one of those things. I read a lot in the field and see what's happening, and I can see that, you know, where we're progressing. And the question then becomes, you know, how can we best move in that direction?
Absolutely. And one of the things, you know, you've mentioned, obviously, again, I suppose there's certain sensitivities you can't really go into, but looking at the kind of project scope that you're currently doing, what are or what can you tell me about some of the things that you're, you know, currently trying to deliver?
Okay, I guess it's one. The current thing is one of many current things. This is one. We were trying to bring mobility to the airmen for a while now. Mobility is interesting because we always say we want, you know, you think the airplanes are mobile, they are, but the airmen, mobility is a big key, because what we're trying to do, a long time ago, we thought about, okay, here we have airplanes on the tarmac that are being repaired. We don't have any connectivity for any iPad or any pad whatsoever that we have some information on it to them, because there's no connectivity out in the field, in the airfield. So one of the big pushes that we've been pushing right now is pulling LTE and 5G out into the bases to keep them to start doing some of this capability. And so we've always said, okay, what do you want to do? And so one of the projects right now is LTE for all the bases and 5G eventually, as soon as 5G comes comes about. And we're investigating various 5G technologies and doing some experiments with 5G technology right now, even though the current release is not the release that has all the security and all the cool features in it. That's the next release, 16. And so, for instance, I have to be knowledgeable about what are the releases for 5G coming out. What applicability are they for particular missions that we have? And one of the missions that we have is for the repairman at the aircraft trying to fix something. And so we wanted to say, okay, would it be nice if we have augmented reality whereby the repair guy could actually look and see, you know, here's the issue. And he was a new repair guy, to have somebody in the background with augmented reality helping him or her fix the aircraft in a way that, you know, trains them at the same time, but actually gives them some experience with, you know, looking at different ways of how to actually do the repairs. And so as we progress down this path, we say, this is where we want to go to. So what do we have to do? We have to do some experimentations with 5G to see how it works. We have to make sure we have enough connectivity on the bases. And so we started various programs pushing that right now out there. And mobility for us also is like the path that they take on the aircraft with them, which is a commercial industry right now. Everybody has their flight bags. Their flight bags is really a pad of information of weather, repair manuals, everything else associated with them. We take a flight bag too on an aircraft, just like everybody else, that we have some connectivity issues right now. We're trying to fix the connectivity issues to download the current information immediately to the pad when they take it onto the plane and everything else. But we also have issues with what frequency you're transmitting and everything else. So we have to be careful because some of the airplane mechanics, if you will, are sensitive to various frequency transmissions in the aircraft. So we got to be careful of what we actually bring into the aircraft as opposed to what we can get on the outside world. So, but all these things play into, you know, what are we trying to do? We're trying to make sure that aircraft could maintain quickly, effectively, in a certain way. We want to make sure that the parts that we want can be ordered directly right there when the repairman is there trying to fix the aircraft. It'd be nice if we were sitting at a depot and the part could automatically be automated, be moved out to where the repairman is in some automated, you know, vehicle. So we're looking at all these technologies to what we want to get to. And so that's one of the ways we look at, you know, going forward with the mission, because that mission is important to get the aircraft going and out in the field.
You know, I'm not going to ask you to guess the future, because of course it's impossible. And, you know, you could be working on something today and then tomorrow something entirely new comes around, which, while not necessarily making it obsolete, but, you know, is the next wave of innovation, the next wave of technology. So I guess really my final question for you then is, you know, if we were to sort of speak in a year or even 2 years' time, you know, where do you sort of see the industry turning then to next, if you could? Because, you know, you talked about how now more and more people from industry backgrounds are coming into, you know, that's sort of like a position like yourself, and that's becoming more common. You know, what will be the next shift, if any?
Well, I think the next shift is basically, I hate to say this, AI. I mean, it's such a buzzword right now. But we're starting to see more and more of augmented support via computers, basically via, you know, neural nets, machine learning capabilities. And we're actually seeing it more and more, and we're actually seeing some places where we can actually start using that now. And so I think that, you know, the push is how to effectively use AI technologies to enable a mission. Because a lot of people look at AI and say, hey, I have to have AI. You know, without even knowing what it is. It's just a cool buzzword. You know, you think of robots, which is the norm. That's not the way it works. But, you know, and they're all mystified by AI and keep telling them, yeah, you know, neural nets and everything is just code, guys. You know, people code those things. It's just another piece of code that's running, that with the new technologies and the faster processing speeds, we can achieve more results now. And so as the processing has increased capability, now we see that there's some applicability for some AI techniques to actually run in real time, which we had a problem with. I mean, we've been doing AI per se for like 20 years. I was coding expert systems way back when they were, you know, just coming out. So, but now all of a sudden we have a processing capability to support some of this. So a lot of the stuff that we're trying to do, especially with and analyzing data and being more of a data-driven organization, I think you're going to see more and more of that coming out as long as it supports mission. And people have to understand that, because it is a bright, shiny object right now. And everybody says, hey, I have to have it. And you're like, great. You know, give me a problem and I can tell you what applicable AI techniques are for that problem space, but you can't just say, I just want it. And, you know, as we progress, and I think you're seeing more and more of that occurring, even though it's still hype. You're also going to see, you know, probably quantum technology to a certain degree come in too, but that's going to probably take another 5-10 years to actually get there.
And I guess then a sort of follow on for that, because, you know, we laugh, but you do mention robots. People have these perceptions of what AI really means and that sort of thing. But, yeah, you know, a number of people have said to me that actually now more than ever, people are still going to be integral. So that as we move towards more automation and more AI, you know, augmented things, the people and the human element is going to be more important than ever. Is that something, you know, you agree with?
Oh, yes. You know, people think, oh, yeah, my job is going to go away because of AI. And we're like, no. AI is just an enabler to do your job better. You still have to be there. We're not going to, you know, but people think, you know, robots taking over the world and everything else. It's not quite that way. That's just because you're not going to get that far. You know, we also talk about some autonomous operations and everything. You know, the autonomous cars are a big deal. Autonomous cars have a lot of problems with them right now because you have to make decisions really fast and you have to do it correctly. And then you're going to get into, you know, ethical behavior of automated, you know, entities. And, you know, we're going through this right now with AI. You know, remember, AI is just code. Somebody's coded a particular way. There may be some biases in that code as to it comes to conclusions, but you don't know that. So, and you have to understand all this. You just can't say, hey, it's really great. We're going to go forward with it and proceed, because that's not how it works. Everybody has to realize, you know, you're doing new technologies and it's difficult at times to get people grounded into the mission that the new technologies are supposed to support. And I think that's what everybody has to be there with, is like you're solving a problem with these new technologies, or you're helping to solve a problem. But this problem is basically something that you want to enhance in your mission set. And so you got to think of technology as an enabler for your particular mission. And a lot of people forget that. They just think, I want to have new technology because it's cool.
Thank you for listening to the Digital Insight Podcast in association with theinterface.net and cpostrategy.com. The Digital Insight is brought to you by B2E Media Limited. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review. And don't forget to check out our podcast archive at www.b2e-media.com/podcast.